This Thursday morning at 9:30 will be the hour for the public enrollment of their children in the Thursday school, and we will begin that school. What is the date of that? I meant to have looked it up. September 1st. We begin September the 1st for the Thursday school, and the members of the church here have been given first opportunity to enroll their children, and it is now half full because of just what we have enrolled, and now we have room for only 50 more. And you're urged to invite those of your friends that want to have their children involved in the Thursday school. We urge you to tell them to come and enroll them this Thursday at 9:30 in the morning, 9:30 a.m. I think that this is going to be one of the better works that this congregation has undertaken here locally. We're thankful for those who are involved in it and are so faithfully executing it. Especially Sister Ellen Brown. She's been working on it faithfully for months now. Today, my wife and I and our children complete 5 very pleasant years in your midst. I can hardly believe that it's been that long. Perhaps you're saying if you had to listen to you every day, you'd know it'd been that long. But it's been one of the most pleasant experiences of our life. And we have felt loved and rewarded and renewed and tired and but never discouraged. But you've always been a sustaining influence. And I think if I had to call to mind the most memorable occasions, it would be those occasions on which you sing. And I can't tell you, and I have tried before, but your singing is such an inspiration to all who are here and who hear it and who are a part of it. Tonight, we're going to conclude our series in the book of James. Ray Wright spoke one Wednesday night recently on the 5th chapter of James on the end of the Lord, how that he's very full of pity and mercy. Did a beautiful job reminding us of the purposes of the Lord and how that we as Christians have had an opportunity to look at the last chapter and we know everything will work out right for the Christian. And I want to thank Ray for that covering of that 5th chapter. We'll begin tonight with verse 13 of chapter 4. Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow, we'll go into such and such a town and spend a year there and trade and get gain. Whereas you don't know about tomorrow. What is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and we shall do this or that. As it is, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. To begin the lesson on a somewhat lighter vein than we'll be continuing it, I saw something on Dorothy's desk last week that says life is what happens to you while you're making other plans. That sort of startles you when you think about it. James, though, calls us to a bit more solemn thinking when he talks about how death is sometimes that which happens to you while you're making other plans. People have been made to live better by remembering that they must die. Charles Spurgeon made that observation, and it's very true. And we all need to be living, not morbid, not morose, and not looking back over our shoulders as though some grim reaper were chasing us. But we need to be alive to the fact that we're all going to die. Isaiah says that all flesh is like grass, and the glory of it is like the flower of the grass. The grass withers and the flower falls, but he that does the will of the Lord abides forever. And then the Hebrew writer, as you're aware, makes the statement, "For it is appointed unto man once to die." And in the Psalms, David said, "Teach me, Lord, to know my end and the measure of my days." We need to be taught. And there are many things in life that do teach us to know our end and to measure our days. Funerals are always a reminder, much like signposts on a highway. And the unexpectedness of the death of associates and acquaintances always jerks us up short and makes us aware of the fact that, you know, we're going to die. And we know that others will die. We're aware of that because we see it happening all around us. And we're even aware of the fact that we're going to die. But you see, we're not going to die until we have gotten our house in order, and until we have lived a full life. And then when we are full of days, we will then gather our feet up into the bed with us, and we will be gathered to our fathers, so we think. But James jerks us back into reality, as though to snap his finger and say, "Look, that's not right." And he begins by chiding and rebuking and reproving those who would make such plans as though it were a foregone conclusion that you were going to finalize and bring those plans to fruition. James begins by reproving those who would plan their future without God in it. He says, "Come now," and he uses a common expression. He uses one that has carried over for 2,000 years since the time that he wrote it. He's saying, "Come on. Come now." We use the expression today, "Come now." You who say, "Today or tomorrow, we're going to go into this or that city and buy and sell and get gain." Now, that's the major statement. "Come now, you that say that." Then he drops down to verse 15. That's in verse 13. In verse 15, he says, "Whereas you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we'll do this or that." So actually, these two are in, not opposition, but they're spoken in juxtaposition. You're saying this, "Come now, you that say we're going to do this." He says, "Whereas you ought to say this." And then he takes verse 16 and says, "The nature of this kind of planning is evil." He says, "All this boasting is in your arrogance." And he says, "This boasting is evil." All of it, he says, is evil. Now, James, in verse 18 of chapter 1, tells us that he's trying, that God really has caused us to be born so that we might be the first fruits of his creatures. He wants us to be a special kind of people. He wants to bring us to the real fine things of life. And he says, as we notice, that's the purpose. He projects this of his own will. God brought us forth by the word of truth that we might be, in order that we might be a kind of first fruits of his creatures. In other words, he's saying that God caused you to be what you are in Christ Jesus so that your life might excel, so that you might not just be the run of the mill, so that we might not just be people who exist. He says, "I have come," Jesus says, "that they might have life and have it abundantly." That's the theme that overrides all of the teaching and the instruction and the example that Jesus gives us. He said, "I want you to live it up to the fullest. I want you to have life at its very fullest." In fact, Paul told the Colossians, "You have come to fullness of life in him." Well, that's what James is saying here. And as he points people and rebukes us for making plans without God in it, really, when you get right down to it, he's saying to us that the only real full life is the life that's lived in the consciousness of God. You don't reach your potential unless you reach it through planning in the consciousness of God. You don't live your life in its fullest extent unless you live it in the awareness of the presence of God. And so James, as he calls us here to be this kind of first fruits, the cream of the crop, He's saying you do it by living your life aware that God is in charge. He's in control, not you and me. And he simply says, come on now. Those of you who say, we're going to do this or that, he said, you don't know what's going to happen. And he says, you ought to say, if God wills, we'll do this or that. And so the best life is lived by those that are aware of God. But not just those who are aware of God. It's those people who, being aware of God, are willfully submissive to God. That's the one whose life reaches its fullest potential. There are people who are aware of God, who think of God, but only as they think of Him in terms of being guilt-ridden. They think of Him as though He were, you know, and they think of Him only in terms of fright or fear or being guilty before Him for not living in submission to Him. It's only the person who, in realizing the existence of God and that we live in Him and we move in Him and we have our being, our very existence in Him, it's only that person who is then submissive to God because of that, who is liberated then into the fullness of life, to where he lives life without any of the drudgery or without any of the detracting influences that would cause us to be pulled down by the gravitational pull that pulls us back down to the earth. We then, because of our awareness of God and because we live in submission to God, we then live in His strength and we soar like on eagle's wings. And there's where we gather the excellency of our life. There's where we come into real, genuine excellence. And Jesus spoke of it, that we might come to that kind of life. Well, not only does He chide anyone who would live without being aware of God, but He also then reminds us, you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. You just don't know. You know, He asks the question here, instead, when He says, what is your life? For you're a mist. No, back in verse 14. Whereas you don't know what will happen tomorrow. There are 1,000 doors or 1,000 gates, someone said, that leads into the city of death. 1,001 gates that lead into the city of death. You don't know which one you're going to take. Nor do you know when that gate will open and you'll have to be ushered through it. There was an emperor, Justinian, emperor of Rome, who died from smelling fresh paint, killed him. And a pope by the name of Adrian choked to death on a fly. Well, those are very unusual. Another man hiccuped himself to death. It's kind of funny, isn't it? It weren't so tragic. And not long ago, it was, it's been 10 or 15 years, I guess, another one of the popes incidentally hiccuped for days until they thought he was going to die. Finally, they got it stopped. Well, today we live in such terrifying times, and I use the word terrifying for the simple reason we're living in the days of terrorism. A terrorist bomb lurks in the shadows of most of the places upon which we inhabit the earth. In most of the big cities, you never know when a terrorist bomb will explode. And that doesn't have to be overseas. It can be in New York City, in Manhattan. And last week, 100,000 Manhattan employees rushed out of those office buildings into the streets as one bomb exploded. It killed one man and wounded several others. And then there were several other bomb threats that kept people not knowing whether they would exit through the door of a bomb or would be allowed to live a normal life and exit in a more normal fashion. One of our students 2 or 3 years ago was on her way home to see her parents over in Iran or some of those Near East countries, and she didn't have the benefit of a warning. A terrorist bomb went off in the airplane and killed her, took her life. Her brother escaped, but her life was taken in that senseless terrorist bombing. A friend of mine, really I didn't know him, but his life influenced a meeting that I was to hold in North Carolina, Abilene, North Carolina. The day or two before the meeting was to begin, he was driving a truckload of logs back to North Carolina. And he stopped to get off and go get something to eat. And he was standing there beside his truck, and one of those chains that was holding the logs broke and crushed his skull. He never knew what hit him. The chances of that happening, you'd say, would be just infinitesimally small. That's right, but it happened. Recently, we read that one of the hospitals in a great one of our cities, through a mix-up of the gases, instead of giving people oxygen, had been feeding them laughing gas. And it had perhaps taken the lives of many people. Even among those people who are trying to preserve life, things happen that actually take life. And you would think, well, that would be an unusual gate into death. Yes, it is an unusual gate. But you've got to take it into consideration. The other night we had a man, Brother Greg Rhodes, and we didn't know but what Brother Greg was suffering a heart attack that would take his life. And he was carried out on a stretcher. And that frightens us. So we're always being surrounded by threats of death, but the unwise person always says, but that's the other person. It won't happen that way to me. But James says, you don't know what's going to happen on the morrow. I do know this, that men have been made better people. As Spurgeon said, they've been made better men by remembering that they're going to die. It's appointed unto man once to die. Peter Waldo, one of the great leaders of the religious groups over in Europe, in southern France. Peter Waldo led a group of people there, and they became known as the Waldensians because they were followers of this great man. Peter Waldo saw at a banquet one night one of his fellow guests just slump down and die right there. And it startled him into serious thinking. And that man went home that night and began to get his life in order. And as a result of it, not only his life was made better, but the lives of thousands upon thousands of people in southern France and then later on in America were made better because this man was made aware of the fact that, you know what, I could die. Martin Luther was walking across the country one day with one of his friends whose name was Alexis. And the lightning struck Alexis dead right in the presence of Martin Luther. It startled this good man into perhaps and probably more serious thinking about his life because he had been reminded that people are going to die. And it could be me. I baptized a man just last week who came, it seems, from what was said, out of having been the fortunate escapee from an automobile wreck that almost or could have taken his life. And the man who taught him said, that automobile wreck did make you sober, didn't it? Make you think. A teenager, you know, teenagers just don't think they're going to die, ever. You're young, you're vigorous, you're healthy. You don't think about dying. When you get on up in years, you think about it more, but don't talk to you about death. In fact, I'm sure this perhaps is boring or it's morbid. But someone sobered a teenager once when he said to him, what are you going to do when you get out of school? The young man said, oh, I'm going to go to college. And then he said, well, that's interesting. What are you going to do then? He said, well, I'll get a job. And the man said, and then what? He said, well, I suspect I'll get married and we'll have a family. And the man said, then what? He said, well, I don't know. I guess we'll buy a house and we'll settle down. And he said, then what? He said, well, I don't know. I guess I'll grow old. He said, and then what? Well, he said, I guess I'll die. And then he said, and then what? And by the time he finished querying this young man, the young man was very uncomfortable. What do you do then? Then what? James says, you need to be reminded that death is always at hand. And it doesn't always just take the other person. Now, James calls us to another disturbing reality, and that is the brevity of life, even at its best. As far as its being substantial, its solidarity, James asked this question, what is your life? Now, he wasn't asking for an answer. This is a rhetorical question. It doesn't want an answer. It doesn't need an answer. He's saying, in essence, your life is a little bit more than nothing. Just, that's about all it is. What is your life? You know, what difference does that make? Or what's that got to do with it? Meaning, that has very little, if anything, to do with it. This meaning, well, your life is a very little bit more than nothing. And when you look at it, as far as its solidarity, really you can't put your finger on much of it. You can't even define it. Can you define life? No. You'll have to use the negation or the term, a negative term, it's the absence of death, but what does that say about it? As far as its permanency, as far as its longevity, your life is not nearly as long and doesn't last nearly as long as inanimate objects last and as lifeless or breathless objects last. The tombstone that will mark your grave will outlast the number of years that you've lived here. It'll be here a long time after you're gone, and it will exist as a monument to your life for years and years beyond the span of your life. We saw some Roman olive trees over in Israel, 2,000 years old. And about the best we can do is 80, 85, maybe 90. At the most, say 100, about a century. Those trees live to be 2,000 years old, and I guess they'll live until the Lord comes again. So they're objects that outlive you. And you need to be aware that life at its very best is brief. David made a statement in Psalms 39 that's interesting. Especially it's interesting in the King James Version. David said in verses 4 and B and 5, he says, "Let me know how fleeting my life is. Behold, thou hast made my days a few handbreadths, the span of a hand, just a few of them. And my lifetime is nothing in thy sight. Surely every man stands as a mere breath." That's the Revised Standard. The King James says, "Verily, every man at his best state is altogether vanity." Listen to what this says. Every man, or man, is vanity. Then it says, every man is vanity. And it says, every man at his best state is vanity. And it says, every man at his best state is altogether vanity. And then he says, verily, every man at his best state is altogether vanity. And then it says, verily, every man at his best state is altogether vanity. And then he concludes that with the word Selah. And I don't know of any better translation of Selah than just to say, you've said it. Amen. Job, he says, my life is swifter than a runner. My days are swifter than a runner. They flee away. They see no good. They go like skiffs of reed, like an eagle sweeping on the prey. Well, and you know all of those categories that the young man was asked about. When he asked, what then? And he said, well, I'll go to school. And what then? Well, I'll get a job. And what then? Well, I'll get married. And what then? I'll have children. All of these neat categories that he was called upon to bring to focus. All of them, they come and go so quickly. I was talking with my oldest son, Tim, and he says, I can't believe that this is my senior year. Where is it all gone? And those who are students, you know, it'll be gone before you know it. And then you'll say, well, then I'll get married, and have children. And those little children will be grown before you know it. They're swifter than a runner. Your days just flit by one after the other. And the work that you're going to do, it'll be gone before you know it. And what will you have accomplished? Well, whatever you will have accomplished. But all of these categories come and go, and the curtain is no sooner raised than it is dropped abruptly, many times without warning, sometimes prematurely, unexpectedly. And that's the way life is. Well, there are some lessons that we ought to learn, one or two. I want to fill my life with things that count. If life is uncertain, and if death is certain, and if life at its best is brief, I want to fill my life with what counts. And you know, that won't be with things. Jesus said that a man's life does not consist in the abundance of things. Now, at the same time, he's given us all things to enjoy, all things that are good to enjoy. We know that. But life just doesn't consist in the abundance of things. Recently, we were driving by some of the beautiful homes up near the country club. Man, have you ever been up there? Whew. I never had been up there till the day before yesterday. Or was it yesterday? It was Friday night. Trawick and Louine and I drove up into those hills and saw those mansions. And we had just had a family come to us from Memphis to look about putting their daughter in school. And Louie was going to give them the nickel tour. Not the quarter one, the nickel one. And so she took them through our old house. You know, we love that place, fireplaces, and it's just right. But she took them through there, and there wasn't a comment, not an observation at all. And as they left, they said, "You must come and bring your girls and spend a morning in our new home in Memphis and swim in our new pool." Well, no wonder they didn't say anything about our house. But as we were out in this area that was so beautiful, and the people out there have beautiful tastes, but they have expensive tastes. And I was going by and I was, you know, thinking about what can I say to my wife. I keep telling her, "Hang with me, honey, just stay with me. Stay with me." And I told her and I told Trawick, I said, "Well, we're building our home out further. Way out further. We're going to build it out where eternity is. That's where we're sending our money. That's where our interests want to be. So I want to fill my life, since life is not permanent. We don't have any abiding city here. I think one of the lessons I'd like to learn is that we have a city somewhere else, a building from God that's firm in the heavens that He's built. And so let me not love the world or the things that are in the world, for all that's in the world is the love of the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, and the pride of life. And the world passes away, and all the things that pertain to it. But he that does the will of the Lord abides forever." You know, life's span is vaporous enough without life's purposes being empty also. If life's span is so vaporous, what is your life? It's just a vapor that appears a little while, and then it's gone. Well, then, Lord, preserve me from having the purposes of my life as empty as my span. Let me then, let me catch on to that which is permanent and that which is lasting. We were over in Austria 7 years ago, came through there and met Bob Vance, and I've told you about that amazing Christian man. And we were out one night, and he was new in Austria, in Vienna, and we got lost. Lost as a goose. We didn't anymore know where we were. We tried our very best to get back home and couldn't make it. We were lost for about 2 or 3 hours in the city, just going in circles. So we started kind of laughing about it. And I told this young man, I said, "Bob, give my boys some good advice. What would you tell them so that they'll remember what you are and who you are? Give them some good advice on which to build their lives." And Bob turned around to those boys and he said, "Boys, make God the center of your life, and then everything else will fall in its proper place." And that's all he said. But you know, when you get right down to it, what else is there to say? Make God the center of your life, and everything else will fall in its proper place. And then the second lesson after making your life count and filling it with things that count, which means putting God in the center and other things around that center, the second thing that this lesson in James teaches us is, do it now. Do it now. What you would do, do now. What you would be now. For you may not get a chance. You may not get an opportunity for tomorrow. So what I would be, let me be that today, before the vapor vanishes, and before this fragile breath of which I am made just disappears. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come and the years draw nigh, when you will say, "I have no pleasure in them." Before the sun and the light and the moon and the stars are darkened and the clouds return after the rain. In the day when the keepers of the house tremble and the strong men are bent and the grinders cease because they are few, and those that look through the windows are dimmed, and the doors on the street are shut, when the sound of the grinding is low, and one rises up at the voice of a bird, and all the daughters of song are brought low, They are afraid also of what is high, and terrors are in the way. The almond tree blossoms, the grasshopper drags itself along, and desire fails, because man goes to his eternal home. And the mourners go about the streets before the silver cord is snapped, or the golden bowl is broken, or the pitcher is broken at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the cistern. And the dust returns to the earth as it was, and the spirit returns to God who gave it. So I would say, what you're going to do, do it now. And that means anything that's worthwhile. If you're going to be a father to your children, be that father now. They're going to be gone. If you're going to be a mother to your children, be that mother now, because the days will be when there'll be no more toys around. They'll be gone. If you're going to write a book, write it now. If you're going to be a friend to someone, be a friend now. If you're going to be hospitable as a Christian, then do it now. If you would show mercy to somebody, then do it now. If you would clean up your speech, do it now. If you would train your thinking into channels of holiness, do it now. If you would rise to higher planes of living, do it now. James says, you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. Many a person will stand before God in the day of judgment and will say, Lord, I was going to. James says, Come now, you that say, today or tomorrow, we're going to do this or that. He says, you don't know what's going to be on tomorrow. Whereas you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we'll do this or that. Because it says, what is your life? It's just a vapor that appears for a short time and then vanishes. May God bless you. May I urge you today, if you're going to obey the Lord, obey Him now. Right now, today is the day of salvation. Right now is the acceptable time. And in line with what James is saying to us, would you accept the invitation of Jesus? It's so simple. If you believe in Him, and you alone know whether you do or not, but if you've come to the place that you see, you know what, I believe in that man, and I want to be on his side, don't put it off. And you may be nearer the kingdom of God right now than you've ever been in your life. Then do it now. The water is ready, the garments are prepared, and if your heart is prepared, and you're sitting here and you're burning in your heart because you know the things are true that have been said, and you know James is right, wouldn't you then do what you're going to do now while we stand and sing?